So, like, you talk about the consumer end. Like, I was a consumer for most of my gun buying days. And so when we set out, it's like, you know what? I don't have anything to lose at this point. It's already purchased, so let's just make it. Like, what has pissed me off over the years? And then let's, like, find a simpler solution. And that was really, like, each piece of it. That's what it came about.
Welcome to the Big Tech's Ordinance Podcast. I'm Ike. We have Chris, Justin today, and then we also have Aaron from Cobalt. So we've been hanging out with Aaron for a little bit and doing some other stuff, and really good to sit down with you today, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. So for those of you, for the folks out there, can you just give us a little background on yourself, kind of who you are, how you got started, how you came to be with Cobalt and on that whole journey?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a weird journey. You know, my professional career has been in the economic side, mostly in pharmaceuticals, and that's where I come from. COVID went down in the beginning of 2020 and kind of shut my travel. And the end of May, someone called me, and, you know, I had a property out in Utah with a couple of guys and got good internet coverage, so that's where I was doing my work, was just out at the property shooting guns in between calls. Someone called and said, hey, Cobalt Kinetics has a Connex box. They want $3,500 for it. It's got some Gallotech in it. It's got some gun racks, and yeah, it looked cool out there. So I went over, had some guns in it, asked them if they were selling any of them, said they're selling the whole company, and kind of made a decision to transition, made an offer that night. They accepted, and
oh wow,
9 days later.
Holy cow, I had no idea.
In the gun world, yeah.
Wow. 9 days later, you owned Cobalt.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. COVID made us all act a little crazy, I guess.
Yeah.
But nah, it's been fun. Like, the old guns weren't really my style. Matter of fact, in 2015, like, I walked into a buddy's gun shop, and he's like, oh, look what I just got, these new Cobalts. I'm like, I would never own that. Like, not even close. And our statements sometimes come back and bite us.
Yeah, because you bought the company.
I bought them all.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's one thing, like, you know, the Cobalt of today is totally different than the Cobalt of, you know, 2015 or, you know, before you took over. So do you want to talk a little bit about that and, like, kind of how you're revitalizing the company and changing, like, the whole?
Yeah, I think by nature, I'm a tinkerer, and I'm a fairly analytic person. I mean, being in economics, like, that was what I did. And so I'd build ARs over the years, and there were just certain things that I felt like could be or should be or different, or could make the platform a little more efficient, take some of the drawbacks out, add some simplicity to it. And so after I bought it, Cobalt, got an engineer and just said, you know, he's not a gun guy. I was like, look, I can't draw, but I'm going to draw some things, and that if I need to explain it to you, we'll get there. But he actually can translate all of my drawing glyphics or whatever you want to call that. But we just sat down, and, you know, he developed a framework of it, and then it was like just pointing and changes, like, hey, I want this here, I want this here, I want this here. And then after I made essentially what, like, where I thought it would be or should be, then started gravitating towards people with actual experience and not just tinkers, and said, hey, this is what we've created. Like, pick it apart. Tell us what you hate. Tell us what you changed. What did we miss in this? And then spent about a year and a half just kind of going back and forth of, like, this tweak here, this on the rail, this would make it a little bit better. And then probably May last year, we had kind of, was like, all right, here it is, and this is what we're going to go with.
Yeah.
How did you, we'll back up a little bit, or pre-Cobalt, because one thing you said, so to preface this interview a little bit, we've spent the last 3 hours building a gun piece by piece and going over it piece by piece pretty much with you in our workshop. And me and Justin were able to get some really good questions on it. And you mentioned one thing when we were talking about safeties that dinged my interest. So you were into guns pretty hardcore before you bought Cobalt.
Yes.
Right? Training. You were doing some training before? Or is that picked up after?
It's become different after. Before Cobalt, I never had like the plate carriers, the kit, I had ARs and I loved ARs. I love shooting the platform. There's a real fondness there, but it was all of my training and everything I really did was based around concealed carry, because in my mind that was what was relevant to me. And so I would take like CCW classes, and like everything I did was based around what I'm carrying on me. It was afterwards that I thought I need to get more relevant with and have something to relate to people that are giving me, you know, input and feedback. Like people talk about stocks and how it interacts with their kit, and I'm like, I've never even thought of that, have no idea what you're talking about. It's like, all right, I need to get a plate carrier and like actually put the stock against it and see what they're referring to. So, and then that comes with training and stuff too.
Okay, cool. And some of the trainers you've trained with are, if you mind.
Some of them. Condition One group out of Miami, they've become really good friends. They've had a lot of good feedback on different things, and they're one of the earlier guys. Kawa Male with 2 Alpha Training. He's just down here in Houston.
Yeah, he's local to us.
Former Green Beret. Rick Hogg, former unit guy. John Dufresne, Don Edwards, buddy out in California, Ronnie Jeffries. There's quite a bit. I know I'm missing several people, so sorry.
So that leads into the switch, right? That leads into the flip of what Cobalt was prior to you buying it, mm-hmm. and what Cobalt is now, which is really cool, because a lot of people, like, I didn't know until today, a few minutes ago, that was a total, like, you didn't own it prior, right? Like, I did not know that.
Yeah, definitely want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's cool.
Yeah, so Cobalt's been around since 2014. Mm-hmm. And when I shot the guns, like, it wasn't just, like, looking at them and be like, all right, I'm going to buy this thing. It was like, I saw them, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. Like, so I bought one of the guns from the Connex box, took it out and shot it, and I was like, "Oh, like, wait a second, like, there's something unique about this." And so they had some concepts that I liked, but I could also see a lot of downsides in like the materials that were used, the complexity of it. So it's like, okay, how do we take some of these characteristics and turn them into something that is relevant to a broader base of people, someone who's going to, you know, what's hard use, and then just kind of worked on reliability.
And how did you work on the reliability side of it?
Trial and error.
Yeah.
Like, like beat the crap out of guns, like put them in bad conditions. Fortunately, we're in Southern Utah, which the desert dirt is like moon dust.
Yeah.
And so we have no shortage of dirtiness.
Guns don't like that.
No. Like, I've drug a gun 3.5 miles down a gravel road, throwing it off cliffs. Just trial and error is a lot. Like, for me, I'm a hands-on guy. So if I have an idea, like, I'd rather, like, work up something and then develop a concept and then fine-tune that concept and then make it as simple as possible.
And then you've started building your team at Cobalt. You brought in some good friends that we know. You got Mikey over there. You got Gabe.
Mm-hmm. Gabe came on. I met him kind of just, it was on a random off chance that he was doing some stuff in Vegas and a friend of his, Dirty Harry, was coming out to film some stuff for us. And he's like, Gabe, come help me. Like, I think these guys are lost. Like, the owner has no idea, like, what social media is. And so he's a mess. He needs, like, come help me out. And he's like, oh, I've been here for 2 weeks on the road. He showed up just, like, not his normal self, like, if you guys know him. And introduced himself. And it just kind of materialized from there, just one thing after another. And then about a year after that, maybe a little bit less, I got a call from Mikey and said, hey, I'm looking for a change. And, you know, figured you might be looking for someone. And he came out. It was a good fit. And he's been a good asset to us. There are a few things with, you know, different parts manufacturers. And because when you're trying to build something super reliable and you're having to also rely on other vendors, and, you know, even if it's a mil-spec product, doesn't necessarily mean it's actually mil-spec or that the heat treat's done appropriately or all, like, so, you know, we'd buy a big batch of something and all of a sudden we find out the dimension's wrong or the surface conversion or the nitride or like, and the, whatever it might be isn't exactly done. And so it's like, well, crap, just made some mistakes. So he's been really good about, like, ensuring the QC of the products coming in before they go into the product. Mm-hmm. And then, like, ensuring that all of the guys have a very strict adherence to our QC and our call outs so that the guns that go out the door are ready to rock.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tex
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tex
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Myrrh upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those are my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Going to be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors
class. Armors class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
And so once you took over, what all, can you kind of walk us through, like, what you changed on, like, the Cobalt AR from 2019? How is it, or how is the Cobalt rifle today different from a Cobalt rifle from 2019?
The dimensions are shrunken quite a bit. I mean, like, historically, billet guns are going to be bigger, thicker, wider walls. They don't need to be. And so we took that down to, like, we'll call it just like a standard forge dimension. It drops the weight quite a bit. And then the upper was just something I had in my head and wanted to go, like, explore it a little bit more. So it made sense to invert those threads, extend it out, change the thread pitch that was on it. And then the buffer system that they had before had a very similar concept with that anti-cavitation nipple, but it was made of Delrin. There was the plastic sleeve down in the tube, which was those are all reliability fail points in my view, but the concepts that they were attacking are real. you know, decreasing. So they had a smaller inner diameter with that tube in the buffer, but then the springs that were they were using were thicker. And people are like, how does that work? But the reality is, like, every rifle out there has a spring and tube diameter mismatch. So what you get is, like, coiling, and you get wall scratch and all kinds of weird stuff in there. And it's just not as efficient as it should be. I like the Voltor A5 system. I think it's got a lot of features that, from a reliability standpoint, increase and make up for other shortcomings that could come, whether you got, you know, higher gas with a specific suppressor, you've got increased rate of fire from whatever it is, but it's got that spring in the back that really helps it engage or re-engage into battery. But I like that nipple feature on the buffer. And so we work to with them and collaborating on how do we make this into something that's unique to us, but can add an increase in efficiency in the gun.
And that's a really, we covered that in the video a little bit, or what we will make a video of maybe at some point. I don't know which one's going to come first, the chicken or the egg here, but we covered that a little bit in the video. And this past weekend, I ran the y'all's buffer in my 14.5 for Dawson's class that we had. Like, it's smooth, but I think we're the only ones selling them at this point.
I think stand so. Alone. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
I mean, I found that out like an hour ago, but yeah.
By the way, we're selling your buffer standalone, and it's a really cool fix. And we know how popular the A5H2s are. Like, they're hard to keep in stock. Mm-hmm. And so that just gives our customers at BigTexOrdnance.com another option. When it comes down to it, we don't plug stuff a lot, but the fact that y'all teamed up with Voltor, who's a known standard in the industry to do that is cool. Cause, they definitely, I don't know why you'd build a gun today without a A5H2 system. If it needs that. Right.
I want to talk about the upper. So like one thing I don't think a lot of people realize is like how your upper receiver is and how the handguard interfaces with that. I think we're probably doing a video on out of the build that y'all did today, but can you talk a little bit about that
and what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. That's what,
like,
it was actually 2020 SHOT Show. Sorry, that's me vibrating over here. 2020 SHOT Show, I kept hearing around. And me saying this isn't, you know, I mean nothing other than this is where it started. I was talking about Geissele's rail and how much stronger it was and, you know, all of the features. And I was looking at it just going, I feel like the Band-Aid is just being bigger, or we're trying to strengthen how the Band-Aid attaches. And I wanted to take it back a little bit, and try something else. So the handguard and the barrel, they're always slaved together on a traditional system because the piece, whatever it might be that holds on the barrel, holds on the handguard. And so whatever forces happen to one is going to happen to the other. And I really wanted to separate them. I wanted them to be completely standalone components because they each have specific roles. Like, you know, you might be adding a bunch of weight on the end with a laser, a light, a grip, or whatever. Or you might be barricading. You might be down on a bipod putting a bunch of load into it. So it really needs to be able to have a standalone component that doesn't affect the barrel. Because if you're, you know, on a traditional gun, if you're putting a lot of load into it, you're barricading, you have the propensity to adjust. Like if you're going to flex on that handguard, you're going to flex the barrel too. So just separating those two things. Like I know there's other companies that have done stuff similar. You know, Monolithic uppers will do the same thing, but they're very hard to like service or change a barrel, or like you're just limited on things that you can do with it. So it's like, how do we make this more like that without going too complex with it? I know Aero Precision's done something different. Like, I actually didn't know any of this stuff when I did it. But I like, to me, it's not revolutionary. You know what I'm saying? They're small, minor adjustments, but the way that we did it acts very differently, and it has an impact on the final product that is it's consistent, and it's a known ending and a known outcome. Like our guns don't have to be built by us to get the same result. So mm-hmm. like you buy a receiver set, just follow the torque specs and put it on, and it's kind of dummy proof. Like I mentioned before, like I want to make something super simple so that I don't have to put any thought into like the process.
And for those that may not know, we can probably put up a picture or something, but it's basically you have your upper and then where you have like basically like an internal barrel nut that holds the barrel in.
Yeah.
But then that's separate from what holds the handguard. So the handguard is attached basically directly to the upper receiver because the barrel, what would be a traditional barrel nut, is basically part of the upper receiver.
It's a sleeve for the barrel nut, essentially.
Yeah, it's just like a little tube that, so, you know, to make an accurate gun, you're going to want to like check for high spots where that thread run out is on a traditional gun. And you might lap it to make sure that there's like no high spots and you're getting a flush flat fit all the way around. Well, we just removed the threads from even being considered there. Like, there's no threads going into that surface. It's a flat surface that's milled out and it sits down on top of it. And then you have like 2¾ inches of material that the handguard's going to slide up over and screw into. But the jam nut goes on the inside with a tighter thread pitch and, a fairly tight torque spec. You get a very rigid system. It's more free float than a traditional platform. And that's it. It's held in place with 8 screws that are all, if you look at it, and we didn't actually do this in the video, but if you look at them, they're not centered. They're kind of off a little bit so that as you tighten a screw down, it's actually sucking that handguard back into the upper. And then the upper itself, like, it always irritated me that they've got these fat ends of Picatinny that never line up with one another and they're never the same lengths. But if you look down our handguard and upper, it's a continual, like everything's consistent on it. So you can cross mount stuff. There's a little timing key in it. You're always going to be in the exact same spot.
Nice.
It's definitely one, and not to knock on other manufacturers or not, but you know, you change the aesthetic of the rail and it's the same barrel nut, or you change this, but they're all attaching the same way. And like, you know, you go back to like a really cool rail. I won't drop in manufacturer's name, but like in 2010 or 2013, NSRs were hot, right? I'm going to drop the name. They were, Noveske rails were hot. They were the first ones that were doing this thing. They were super skinny, but you had to time it. Like, you had to time your barrel nut so where you're, freaking thing. Oh, you had 4 holes that you were lining up. It was an absolute nightmare to put that handguard on. And maybe they've changed some stuff now, but it was horrible to put it on. That is the quickest installing of a handguard I've ever seen. Because, okay, torque down the barrel nut. Proper torque. Cool. All right. Pretty much. And it's not this easy. Just put the handguard on. But it is, seriously, just put the handguard on. Lock it in, 4 screws, you're done.
It's even got anti-rotation milled or extruded, whatever, into the upper and the rail, so like you don't need an anti-rotation pin. It's already there. I thought that was really cool.
It's pretty clever. It's super clever. And you just drew that out on a napkin.
No. I sat with the engineer and said, this is what I wanted to look like. And he did that. Please. I can draw simple things that look nothing like what's in my head, but like, I don't even attempt to do the complicated stuff.
And so that wasn't there prior to you buying Cobalt.
No, there's a similar feature to the XL platform, the 308/65 Creedmoor that they did. That was more similar to like what I found out later was the Aero Precision. I can't remember what it's called, but so they had that. I'm like, that like this is still, this is like, let's take it a little bit further.
And so that's, I mean, that's a proprietary barrel nut that you use on a proprietary upper.
And the barrel nut is 7075 aluminum. And the I wanted the same material. I didn't want competing alloys or competing metals to, you know, I didn't want to go steel on an aluminum because it just that doesn't make sense to me. To the tune that if, you know, we Cerakote those just like we Cerakote the receiver itself. So like the finish of the receiver is going to be the finish of the nut itself. So if we anodize to get it anodized. So.
And then you get the same thermal properties out
of it. Yeah, same expansion and contraction rates. And it's essentially bonding the material together.
You didn't know it. No, I knew about thermal properties, didn't you? Isn't it cool?
Science.
Science. I'm the guy that makes it go fast. I just don't know how it works. but no, it's really cool watching that. And we spent probably maybe one of the world's longest rifle builds this morning.
Yeah, it was a little lengthy, but lots of good discussion.
Yeah, so. Very good questions. You got any questions from the build while we were doing that?
I did. And, of course, you know, just forgot all of them. But, yeah, no. I mean, it's a very, very unique process, and the thought that goes into the innovation is very evident. So that is very much appreciated.
And so y'all's your muzzle devices, you've got some for the chemo system. You got some for the Hux Works. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So that muzzle device or the concept of the muzzle device came out of a request, and the request was just, I mean, it was a tall order. Like I want what a flash hider does with a brake and a linear comp, like just put them all together and go. And I was like physics has a problem with that. Like, and so I just started testing all, like I had some ideas like with like vacuum type, there's some crazy stuff that I've tried that a lot of it has failed miserably. Just started messing around with a lot of stuff and looking at like what was important to me was like brakes typically have just massive amount of concussive force, but you know, it didn't like you can have like a lot of movement that comes out of it. And if you're going to get that, you know, the muzzle rise out of it or a dip in it, to compensate for it, you got to put holes in the top, but that then affects how the gas flow is going through a device, and that diverted gas flow can have an effect on accuracy. And so it's like, how do we make something that like every equal and opposite that's going to happen with gas is there. So every piece on that muzzle device, has an equal and opposite on each side. So every hole has a corresponding hole in the direction that they're going, but we didn't want it to be super flamethrowy and massively, like bright under night vision. So taking all of those things into consideration, it was months and months of just trial and error, until we found that. And the first one we went after was like the dead air chemo system, how it goes there. And, then we went to the Hux Works side and made what I thought was great. And then took it out and I'm like, man, this is like, this is not how a traditional Hux Works can works. Like, I feel like I'm getting way like a more increase of the carrier speed. So it's like, I'm an idiot. And I built one device for a traditional like baffle stack or in there, but didn't take into consideration how it would affect something that had a flow through. Mm-hmm. And so then it was like back to the drawing board and like, how do we maintain the same effect when there's not a can on it, but then direct this to how it needs to work with a particular can on, and then accomplish that. And right now we're working on other compatibility across the board. Cause one thing I want to make sure is that we offer those same features to every, like it's difficult to get a suppressor. You got to wait a ton of time. Like you're 18 months into a suppressor before you can get it sometimes, or you're actually really like getting good time on it. You know, it might be 6 months, might be 12 months, whatever that is, but that's an investment. You're having to pay it, but a muzzle device, anyone can swap that out. So, you know, got some stuff going with the silencer co-side with others, like, nice. Yeah, CGS, their new SCI-6. So I just want to take some of those features and make them work with what anyone is using.
You're the only other aftermarket HuxWorks device at this point?
I'm not sure. Like, I think so.
I haven't seen,
I haven't seen anything else.
I've been told that. I don't know if they're going to expand that or not. The difficulty and the struggle we went through in accomplishing that is because of the amount of dump that you have to have into that can to really take advantage of the flow through. Like a lot of muzzle devices on how they work won't work on that. I've become like, they've been great to work with. I've made some really good friends over there, and they've been nothing but awesome in getting that to work.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, that's cool. And if you're not the only one, then well, we don't know about it. So there, but it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we just got a whole big batch of HuxWorks in the other day, and I shot the class this weekend with one, mm-hmm. and had a really pleasant experience with that can. There is zero overpressure coming back at you. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the flow through designs, that's definitely the way of the future.
For sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefit to it.
Is that something that you saw, the flow through, and you were like, I wanna make a muzzle device for that? Like, you wanted to get involved in that technology?
You know, being from Utah, and I used to live up north, closer to Salt Lake. And so when HuxWorks came about, there used to be a gun store, it's called The Vault. And I was in the store one time, and OSS at the time showed up, and they had that monstrosity of a system, and yeah. It was like super complex but very intriguing on what it did. And then as it's gone over the years, like I've had different ones. You know, historically it's had some drawbacks, like yeah, you got, you know, they were quite loud. But with their new Flow 556K, there's so much good out of that it was really cool to start seeing, like the it wasn't unpleasant. I think more importantly than it being loud was the fact that the pitch was so high on it that it appeared louder than it actually was. Mm-hmm. And with the new can, the Flow, it lowered that tone significantly. So it might not be the quietest out there, but it's way more pleasant to shoot. And, we've been working on some different projects and contracts that, required that can, and as I became closer and closer with them, it was just it started out as just a project that was like, hey, can we do this, and can we create something that works and support you guys? Because in making a muzzle device compatible to someone else, it's less about me, it's less about the actual company itself, and more about giving options to the end user, giving options that, you know, a consumer may love the can, but they might not, they might have different requirements, or it might be, you know, whatever those reasonings are. It's like, that's where the focus needs to be. And if we can help with that, then it makes a lot of sense and keeps our friend circle wider.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I've noticed today is the customer focus that you have on the different aspects of your rifles or of your line is that, so the HuxWorks device will now bring a 14.5 to 16, right? When you pin and weld it. Mm-hmm. Are y'all working for one for the 13 to 13.7 length or the 13.9? Is that something on the table?
For a HuxWorks?
Yeah. Or is that possible?
That was the original goal, was to do that without creating like a weird gap in there, because they have the longer ones that it's just a longer shoulder on the back end. and I have a few of those, but it's quite heavy, like stupid heavy. And so I have like, it would be, that's not my focus right this second, okay. But it would be, yeah, we've got them. It just, we just need to, work out a few kinks.
Okay. But the 14.5 will be taken to,
yeah,
to 16 if you use your muzzle device. Yep. So that was really cool. And then you've taken that customer focus and even down to your safety. So talk about your ambi safety a little bit.
So the ambi safety that we created, it's like, I'm not the guy that is going to just, I'm just going to tell you what my true opinion is. It's not my absolute favorite. Like I want to put some major focus in on it. Excuse me. But, it came about as a need for us in the COVID times when, you know, we're a growing company, but I couldn't get stuff, or like I had orders to fill, but it was like 7 weeks out. I'm like, well, we can build our own for that one. So we took some features that we thought we could accomplish really quickly. And just, so it's a simple safety. Like it's got a 17.4 safety barrel, and like the paddles themselves, one is long, one short, but the short one has a little bit thicker of a profile so that, you know, it's not hitting your hand at all when you're doing it. 'Cause that's always something that's really bothered me, is like I've almost wanted to just go strictly single side safety on my own guns, because it was just so annoying to constantly like short stroke your safety when you're running into it. So I was like, all right, I've got pretty fat hands, so we'll design it off of that. And if someone's left-handed, like they should be able to take it on and off easily. So we'll just like the screws that go in, like you can just pop them on and switch them over without having to disassemble the rifle. So it's a good design, but if like over the years, like it'll get better.
on the pin subject, so you have an issue with roll pins, right? When it comes to building the guns, you typically like to stay away from them.
Yeah, roll pins, like they're annoying to put in, especially like on like a bolt catch or, you know, some like other places. So it's like I didn't want to. And like, that's not like on the bolt catch, that's not revolutionary. I think CMMG has done something like that. I know Arrow has done something like that. We actually buy screws from them occasionally. Like we try to make everything on our own or have the ability to do it. But sometimes it's just easier to like, you guys have this, perfect, we'll buy them. So yeah, but roll pins in general, they've got so many weak points on them, and we use roll pins in our gas blocks for some time. And then one of our consultants and that we're working with, I mean, after thousands and thousands of rounds, like it just gave up, and the gas tube went back into the receiver, just like you're done at that point. So it's like, all right, happened once, it could happen again, so we're just gonna move completely away from that. And so where that is on the gas block, we use a full coil pin, because you've got significantly more strength that comes out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I messed with one a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, we didn't have you there walking us through building the one that me and Josh kind of hobbled together about with parts that had been blimmed on the way here or after return process. Anyway, that's a whole different story. But like, we're putting that lower together, and we're like, oh, this is fantastic, because I absolutely hate roll pins. That's like the worst part about putting an AR together.
It's one of the biggest learning curves is properly driving roll pins.
Sure. And this was like, oh, look at that. Oh, look at that one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
A pleasant surprise.
It was.
The forward assist pin, or not pin anymore, forward assist has a set screw. That was cool.
Yeah. It's very,
very, very simple.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, like, you talk about the consumer end, like, I was a consumer for most of my gun buying days. And so when we set out and it's like, you know what? I don't have anything to lose at this point. It's already purchased. So let's just make it like what has pissed me off over the years. And then let's like find a simpler solution. And that was really like each piece of it. That's where it came about.
Oh, that's the $1 million quote from the,
yeah,
and thanks for watching the Big Tech Sports podcast. Now that mean that there's always stuff that we as consumers, because that's how we all started, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, mm-hmm. you started the business so you could consume a little bit more.
I wanted a discount, man.
I got into the training aspect of it, and I was like, oh, well, then everybody's like, well, here's this, here's that. And I'm like, oh, cool. This is even better than I thought, you know? And yeah, there's always stuff that you get a product and you're like, man, I wish I could tweak this just a little bit. And now you have your own firearm company.
It's more expensive than you think to make the tweaks.
I bet. And so everything that y'all can machine in-house or have made for you directly in-house that y'all do, correct?
Yeah, we don't actually have machines on site. That was another piece that it was – I'm a big believer in – I'm going to say like measure twice, cut once, but like I'm not – my wife puts together the – furnitures and stuff that come, so she does that kind of stuff. But like, I'm a planner, and so I want to be able to perfect what we're doing first. And so when we bought it, it was like I have no machining experience. I'm not going to jump into two different like pieces of this and try to master both at once. So it's like, but I also don't want to get lost in the you're a small company, so we're not going to. Like you're not going to be our focus. So work with smaller companies that aren't necessarily gun people either. Cause I love opinions and I love like improving on a product. But once we set, like I'd rather fail on my own accord than like someone come in and be like, well, if you did this, this, and this, and then it fails. And I'm like, well, thanks a lot. You just, wasted a bunch of time and money. So we work with people that do not necessarily do a lot of gun stuff, and it allows us to maintain a spot in acquiring our product or getting it made. Mm-hmm. And but eventually we will pull as much as we can in-house. I think from a QC perspective, it's important. But those we work with are like, we demand a lot of QC, but we demand our tolerances to be right in the product to come to us right. But we only work with people that demand that of themselves first. And so when we go out and we're developing new relationships, it's not something we're just like send and go like, all right, well, we're going to try this. Like there's a courtship that has to take place and we have to fit one with another. And that's been a really cool process to kind of refine. And it's created good relationships as we go.
I think that's pretty smart too. Like you said, not trying to become a machine shop and a new gun company all at the same time. Cause a machine shop, like that's being a machining company as a whole. It's its own company in and of itself.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes with its own set of issues.
Oh yeah. And then those are not cheap machines, and to get to make it financially viable, you have to be running at a certain percentage of the time. And, yep. It requires, I don't even want to think about all that would go into that. Yeah, but. No.
How many guys do y'all have working for you now at this point?
12. Yeah, not a big team. Efficiency is what like really is important to me, and like taking those numbers. I mean, time is money, and being able to be as efficient as possible on that. Like, we offer a lot of options with colors, and like we've even got custom stuff that we'll do. And you look at it and you're like, okay, well, from a consumer standpoint, they may be paying like, I don't know, $300 for a custom camo or something. And it's like, yeah, that's a lot of money. But I'm looking at it going, how many other things can we be doing in that like 3.5 hour window that it takes to do this? Or we've done some projects that's like 10 hours of extra work. And so being able to like really hone in on what the maximum efficiency we can put out is really important. I mean, it's a work in progress though too.
And you've arguably got one of the best OD greens in the market. It's actually a Cobalt Kinetic.
Yeah, Cobalt Kinetic green. I had nothing to do with that. Like, I inherited that, and like, I actually didn't even inherit anything other than the name on Cerakote's like website. So, but yeah, it's a good one. I like it a lot.
You could just, from here on out, just say you bought the company because you like that green so much.
That would be a good sound.
That would be a good.
But I'm going to have to practice it though, because it's got to be more natural. Yeah. But yeah.
But it is cool. And the and y'all do some special runs, right? Like we've had the Texas edition. What brought on the Texas edition?
Texans are proud of Texas.
That we are.
Yeah, and it was an opportunity to do something unique with, you know, Scott, our Texas rep, but he's actually expanded out to like the sales director side of it. He's like, you know what, Texas really likes this stuff. What can we do? And we just spitballing, and then it just came about. At first, it was supposed to be just like one gun, one option, and then we started getting other requests, and we're like, well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we can, like, it's a Texas exclusive, so we'll sell them on our website. We don't sell them to people, you know, to dealers, distributors outside of Texas. And so it's been a fun project.
Yeah, it's definitely done well for us when we've been able to get them in and get them out the door. I wonder if, like, New Jersey, if you can go to New Jersey and get, like, stuff. If you walk into, like, a store, if there's, like, New Jersey memorabilia on the wall. Like, every time you go in somewhere in Texas, it's all Texas, Texas, Texas. Mm. Are there states like that?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Not to the extent that we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, we take it to a different level.
For sure.
So you've got...
Go ahead. Nope, after you.
I was going to say, so you've got your 5.56 rifles. What lengths do you offer in those? And then what other calibers and platforms do you all have?
Yeah, so in 5.56, we do 7.5 inch, 10.5, 11.5, 12.5, 13.7. Just added 14.5 because of the situations. 16. I think we do an 18. And like we've occasionally done a 20, and then 300 blackout, we do 7.5 and 10.5, 6mm arc. That was like a long project that started a little over two years ago. And we do a 14.5, 16, 18 and 22, in like the stainless barrels, and then we'd go up to a 20 inch. Oh, actually, no, we do a 22 inch as well in the carbon fiber. And then we'll do 6.5 Grendel and 12.5, 16, and I think 18. Working on some larger caliber stuff right now. We'll have probably by the end of the year or SHOT Show, we'll have in like full production the 308, 6.5 Creedmoor, 260 Remington, and possibly 8.6. I've got to learn more about it.
Yeah,
but
yeah, 8.6 is going to be interesting. I'm curious to see how all that shakes out. It's a cool little round, man.
Cool round. It's like throwing a Volkswagen downrange. Definitely cool. It does some neat stuff suppressed and ballistically. What is it, like a 338 Lapua? And a neck down
to, yeah,
I don't know. Something. I don't know. Craziness. Those guys are like, let's try to do this. Like, sure. What is that? Falkor? Falkor Defense doing those? Or
who's? Faxon.
Faxon, that's right.
Faxon does them, yeah.
Falkor. I just made up a gun company.
No, Falkor. Falkor's a company.
Also a giant dog from a children's movie back in the day. What do you got coming up in the future for
that you can talk about?
That you can talk about besides what you just talked about?
Yeah, I was like, that is that not enough?
What do you want from me?
Yeah,
give us more.
Ambi lowers. That's a can of worms that you can. I mean, that's, you can go down and do all kinds of stuff because there's tons of different options. But you know, we spent the last 2.5 years really like finalizing what we're looking at. And so part of our issue is like, how would we launch that? And you got all these customers that are like, well, great, I've got this old product, right? Like, I want that. So really creating that in a way that it's simple for us to retrofit so that we can offer that as a new product and as, you know, something that people can send in their lower. We put it in, recode it, like clean it up, and then send it back out to them just like really quick too. So we got that. We've got some just small accessories coming out shortly. Some QD sling swivels. Those will come out fairly quickly. Grip. Like a polymer grip. And
like a foregrip or pistol grip?
Pistol grip, yeah. Okay. Sorry, pistol grip. I got some other stuff that I can't share right now.
Okay. Fair enough. Keep your secrets. Yes.
That's where I was going with that. I stole my thunder.
Sorry. We think alike.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, I've got some projects that I've been working on for a little while that I'm stupid excited about, and I don't know, I'm kind of reticently going about it because I don't know if everyone else will be. So
is Cobalt your main focus now? Is that the only thing you're in, or do you do
other? No, I only focus on Cobalt like 7 days a week
only. Mm-hmm. If you had eight, then you could focus on something else. Yeah, just focus on.
No, I could have a break. it's my only focus.
And you're doing a pretty good circuit. You've been in Texas for a couple of days this time.
Yeah.
And then this morning you had Buddy with, or this morning you had Buddy. This morning you had breakfast with a dude who was sitting in that chair yesterday.
24 hours ago.
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's random. I just Instagram saw that he was in Texas. I'm like, hey, you're in Texas. He's like, yeah, I'm in Houston area. I'm like, oh, I'm in Conroe. Well, I'm actually in Conroe too. Like, we found out that like our hotels were like super close. So I was like, yeah, I had breakfast with him and his wife this morning. Good dude. Mm-hmm. Really good dude. Animated. Like, I can't get to the level of animated that he is. So, he's a real positive impact on the community. And, I love associating with people that just have a desire to have a positive impact.
And I'm going to put him on blast right now, cause we'll publish this. And, we were talking about it earlier. We've been talking to Jimmy, right, from Jim's Goon Life. And he's working with y'all on a few projects. We're working with him on a few projects. And I think we're all going to get all together in Utah, hopefully, and see what we can do with some coolness that I won't get too far into. But it's going to be exciting. So coming up, we're going to be doing builder sets with y'all. So where you can pick and choose the rail upper and lower, and then you just pick the rail length on it. And a couple different colors, and we're pretty excited about teaming up with y'all on that, and look forward to other coolness in the future. You got anything else?
I was actually kind of curious. I've never had the chance to ask a manufacturer this. How did you choose your furniture, over, like B5 over Magpul? What went into that decision?
Just a relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Is this where the cards fell kind of thing?
Yeah. And I mean, I like their products. Like, I think it's super simple, their grip, but I think like the angle and that's just personal. Like, right. I mean, everyone's going to have their own preference on stuff. For me, the B5 just made sense. And, you know, for years I ran like a BCM grip. Mm-hmm. And then I took a CQB class, and being stuck on a wall, I was like, man, this isn't right for my hand. And not saying that it's not right for someone else's, but the B5, like, my hand got less fatigued. And so it was just, yeah.
Okay. No, yeah, I was just curious.
And on that note, we have actually lost one camera here, and I'm not going to go into it again. But I think we've pretty much wrapped up this episode. Aaron, thank you.
Absolutely. No, thank you, guys.
And hanging out. And we really appreciate – let's see if I can set this back down. And we'll just zoom in on that. We really appreciate you coming in today and building us a rifle. If you're interested in how Cobalt Kinetic rifles shoot, so it's available as a demo at the range. Anyway, thanks for being here. Justin, thank you.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thank you. And if you need to find out more about Cobalt Kinetics, where do they go, Aaron?
We've got some stuff on YouTube under Cobalt Kinetics, cobaltkinetics.com. Our Instagram is fairly active, but we would prefer that they all go to Big Tech's Ordnance and talk to you guys about it.
Appreciate that. Definitely. And to the viewers, if you're still around for this crazy camera work, we really appreciate it. Let us know how you liked this episode in the comments. Leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you consume this podcast.
Yeah.
And thanks.
Thanks for watching.
Or listening.
Or listening.
Or whatever.
Or both.
Or whatever you're doing. Thank you.